Number three on the list, CJ, what did Bam Adebayo do to anybody? Like, why is he the third most negative tweet? If I can get a theory on that, why the third most amount of tweets about him are negative, if anybody in the league, Bam Adebayo?
I'm just so confused. Well, Bam is such a nice guy. He's quiet. You've covered him in Miami. I don't understand it.
I mean, I did a story on him about how he just bought his mother a house, like, as the first, you know, as the most exciting thing that he could ever do. And yeah, and 37% negative. It's just got to be frustrated Heat fans who want him to shoot a long jumper. I think that's what it is.
Yeah, but his mitty is butter. Maybe it's because he went to Kentucky. Welcome to the CJ McCollum Show. You know who's across from me, Izzy Gutierrez. We are currently recording on a Monday. As always, this will be released on a Thursday, so forgive us in advance for the conversations that we're about to have. Obviously, as we record this right now, we're 13 games into this season. A lot of teams are playing probably better than we expected, right? And then some teams are not playing as well as we expected in the preseason. It's still very, very early, but there are a lot of players that are playing extremely well offensively. Izzy, I think Jimmy Butler had 35 the other night. You've been watching. I don't think Luka Doncic has scored under 30 yet this season. Maybe I'm mistaken, but Giannis is playing really well. Obviously, Dame, Ja Morant. The list goes on. Embiid just dropped the 50 burger. Darius Garland just dropped the 50 burger. Have you ever seen the league look like this in terms of scoring outbursts, but also consistently scoring over 30 points per game?
First of all, look at you mentioning Jimmy Butler first. Not a lot of people around the NBA world are mentioning that guy amongst the best scorers in the league. But yeah, he just did have a 35. and Luke has had two games in the 20s so far, but everything else has been in the 30s or 40s. So he's been ridiculous. I don't think I can remember a singular time. I mean, there was a transition time where it was just like, you know, the first time with the hand check rules after the late 90s. There were like subtle rule changes that just made for higher scoring seasons. But from one year to the next, with like the take foul, I guess, being the one major rule change, right? In terms of game flow, in terms of sort of promoting scoring, if you will. I didn't think it would be enough to get these types of numbers, because you're talking about guys like, what are we talking? There's still seven guys averaging 30 points per game. And I don't think, well, we've had more than two finish a season with 30 or more. And so, yeah. So I don't know if this is like a new trend just based on that rule change, or if it's just kind of a hot early season, because there's some guys shooting from three. Like, I don't know if this is the continued evolution from three, CJ, because like, right, Michael Porter Jr. doesn't seem like he can miss, and you know, he's a big man who probably doesn't even take the easiest shots ever, and they're still good shots for him. So is it basketball evolution? Is it the rules of the game? Is it all just coming together?
I think it's a combination. I think a lot of guys will regress to the mean. But for some of these guys, their mean is 27 to 30 a night. If you look at Embiid, he basically averaged 30 last year. Luka's going to average 30. Let's just get that out the way. So that's two guys that are going to average 30. And you look at the rest of the list, Steph Curry probably averages 30 or close to it, depending on how the end of the season goes with his minutes. Tatum, I mean, he averaged 27 last year, so he's in that 28 to 30 range. He's going to be close. Giannis is probably a virtual lock for 30. So I think we got three locks for 30, and then you got SGA, you got Don, you got KD, who will average between 27 and 30. But I think the locks are Luka, Giannis, Embiid, for sure. So that'll be the record, right, for most players that averaged over 30 since Kobe, Iverson, and LeBron. And
yeah, just to clear up something I said earlier, there have been seven NBA seasons where there have been more than two 30-plus point-per-game scores, and it hasn't happened since 06 when it was Kobe, Iverson, and LeBron. So it's happened where there's been more than two seven times, but seven? That's not going to hold up.
Yeah, I don't think that holds up, but I think back to your earlier point, the game has changed. There's more three-point shooting. Obviously, the pace of play has increased. I look at the pace of play from when I got into the league in 2013 to how we're playing now, just myself particularly in New Orleans. Like the practices have an extra emphasis on pace, on flow, on pass aheads, taking shots within the first 8 seconds on the shot clock. Whereas before, that was frowned upon, and you've been in the league long enough to know that it was frowned upon. One pass shots, pass ahead shots, transition threes on the break. Like, it was frowned upon. You're supposed to run the lane.
You know how I can tell it was frowned upon? Because the announcers from today, which were the coaches back then, are still saying how it's so frowned upon when really the whole league's doing it.
Right. And the analytics is in your favor to play faster, shoot quicker, get more possessions in the game, which gives you a chance to score more points and win. So I think that's been a huge factor. And then you look at the skill set on players now, not that they weren't as skilled back then. There's a higher emphasis on shooting the basketball, spacing the floor. Your fives can shoot, your fours can shoot. Some teams don't even play true fives. They switch a lot more so that there's more one-on-one play. The paint is open. So I think there's a lot of things factoring into this. I don't think seven guys will average 30 for the entire season, but I think more than two will, probably more than three. If you look at the way Embiid plays, the way Giannis plays, the way a Steph Curry plays, where they shoot threes, it's high usage. Jason Tatum shot 20 free throws in a game. And in that same game, DeMar DeRozan shot 22. That kind of shows you how aggressive guys are, but also how they're able to manipulate the referees. I would give up a lot of things to be able to shoot 20 free throws in a game. So I just want to put that on the record right now. would be very, very nice. It may take me 5 or 6 games to get there at this rate based on how games are being called in New Orleans.
When did it happen? Because it felt like, I don't know if it was just the Warriors doing it to Tony Allen, or like there was a very clear demarcation, it felt like, right around there, like the teens, where you can't, like you were saying, you can't have that weak spot. Like, you have to be able to pretty much do all things on the floor, most notably shooting. But like, if you have a major weak spot, it will be exposed. Was it sort of the Warriors showing you that not only shooting wins, but ignoring non-shooters will also help you win?
Yeah, this is a big boys league. And if you look at how the game is played now, if a team scores, they run the same play over again. Depending on who they scored on, they're probably going to go back at that guy again. And then as the game kind of progresses, everyone's trying to find a favorable matchup. They call them pigeons. They call them babies, whatever you want to call them. Get that baby out the street. When you feel like you have a mismatch or a guy who just doesn't cover as well as everybody else on the floor, you're more prone to target them. So you're calling them up in ball screens. You're running actions towards them to try to attack them. And you usually put your best offensive player in those actions against the team's worst defensive player. And I think you look at how Dallas plays, you look at how Phoenix plays, you look at even Memphis, we're going to be playing them. We'll have played them by the time this podcast comes out. Every team that has high usage guards or scoring guards, which is basically every team in the NBA, they're trying to find weak links on defense or just guys who aren't as good as the best defender each possession, especially down the stretch.
All right. So explain to me pigeon. Where did that come from?
So the first time I heard the term pigeon was in New Orleans. And they basically say, you know, someone who just can't really do anything for themselves is a pigeon. Like, they can't really defend. They're helpless out there. Pigeons can't.
So you're out there.
And pigeons fly. But then they fly far. Like, usually you see pigeons just kind of walking around doing nothing, right?
Right. They do seem pretty helpless. So you're out there on the floor. You see Duncan Robinson on the other side. You're doing what? Are you making pigeon sounds? how are you acknowledging that he is the bird that you are seeking?
This is what I would do. We'd be at the free throw line. I would say, roll 5. Duncan Robinson. And Duncan would just look at me and I'd be like, yes, you, we're going at him. He doesn't guard. He can't play defense. Or he's not as good as a defender as Jimmy Butler, as Bam Adebayo, as Kyle Lowry. Like, you go down the list and you just figure out, like, maybe he's not even a bad defender, but he's just not as good as these guys laterally. And you know it. So you have to make the game easier for yourself. We were playing against the Utah Jazz. Roll 5 or 2 up, Kelly Olynyk.
Yeah, you know what? We should play that game. We should give me a 5-man lineup and we should help me figure out who the pigeon is.
Pick the pigeon because you got a better chance of scoring or just creating an advantage for your teammates, because the cool part is each team knows who can't guard on their team, right? Like, you know, if someone's just not as great of a defender, or it's like if you got a mismatch, like let's say that I get Kyle and Joel Embiid. I'm calling for help, first of all. Like, yo, I'm white. Right. I'm fronting them. I'm doing whatever I can. But my teammates know I'm at a disadvantage. right? Like, just about anybody guarding Kevin Durant, you're at a disadvantage. So you're calling for help, but your team has to be on high alert to create the rotation. So it's just not, it's not just a Duncan Robinson or a Kelly Olynyk, or go down the roster, pick a guy on a team. It's more so who's not the best defender that you're going against, right? And how do we exploit these matchups or just create advantages or closeouts for ourselves in rotations?
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you are into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time, or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
So at some point, it just feels like an insult, right, to that person. And you're just going to try to improve that skill set. Like, same way, you know, if you're being left wide open, like Draymond Green, for example, you're going to want to try to, you know, be a better shooter. You know, the Tyler Heroes of the world are tired of getting called out. Why do I keep picking white players from Miami Heat? But the Tyler Heroes are going to be called out, and they're going to do their best to improve that defense. So it feels like you can't be that person for too long. Otherwise, you probably won't be around for very long.
No, you got to take it personally. And teams will call me up in screens too sometimes, right? Like, if you look at our team, right? Who starts? Me, Herb. You don't want Herb guarding you. B.I. 6'8", and he's long. Zeke can move his puppies, but he's also strong and generally guarding a big. You got the big fella, JV, who's either going to be at the level or in a corral, so it's going to be harder for you to get around him. You're looking around, and think about it. I guard ones now, so I'm like a big point guard or good-sized point guard. But if I'm on a three or a four, it's a little bit different for me depending on how tall the three or the four is. So depending on what team we're playing against, like the Utah Jazz might want Lauri Markkanen to have the ball against me, right, because he's so tall. He's basically 7 foot. It's easier for him to shoot over me as opposed to shooting over a 6'9 guy with a 7'3" wingspan. So you just got to get stops. You got to take it personally. And like the Phoenix Suns, right? They'll try to run post-ups or whatever the case may be to try to get me tired, right? Try to wear me down offensively on defense. And you got to get stops, and you got to let the bench know, like, I'm not going for none of that. Like, you get the stop and you look right at the bench. Like, you got me up.
Mark it. Who of the – so Jason Tatum seems to have made the biggest leap, I would say, probably maybe SGA, but in terms of efficiency in his scoring, he's getting basically the same number of shots, but he's up at 32.3 per game. And that's the one where I wonder if it's, like, sustainable, if it's an early season success. Like, you guys have him Friday, so that'll be tomorrow. And what have you seen from Jason that makes you think he has made this leap offensively in terms of efficiency? And do you think how much of that has to do with, like, the end of the way the, you know, his season ended last year in the finals, and, you know, maybe people saying they couldn't rely on him late?
Yeah, I watched a lot of Boston. Warriors fans will attest, I picked Boston to win it all after we were eliminated, and they didn't. But I think one of the reasons why I did was because of his ability to play make. He improved as a playmaker, and I think that opened up a lot of lanes for him offensively. He's obviously a three-level scorer. He prefers to shoot the step-back three or get to the rim, but he's adding a little floater. He's got quick finishes around the basket, and he's comfortable shooting a midi. He's got a little Kobe post-game, like, where he can shoot spin fades over either shoulder. But I think the difference is his efficiency in three-point attempts, quality, right? Like, late shot clock, he's able to get quality three-point attempts. Well, what we would call quality is a tough shot maker taking a shot that they practice over and over again, late shot clock. And the second part of that is ability to get to the free throw line, where he doesn't have to rely on great shooting nights. He can have okay shooting nights, but get 12 trips to the free throw line, find a rhythm, still be able to score without taking an official field goal attempt, and generates more confidence and generates more of a rhythm for not only himself, but that helps Jaylen Brown, right? Because now we're in the bonus earlier. So JB can continue to be aggressive. He can get downhill. He can draw fouls to where he's not having to exert as much energy offensively because now they're in the bonus and you can't touch him. So I think those are the three things I've noticed: playmaking ability, ability to continue to increase his ability to make threes, and then also drawing fouls to make the game easier for everybody.
Yeah, so it's funny because I think, you know, people felt like those two, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, were going to continuously grow, right? And they last year, people thought, hey, they're still growing, and they get to the finals. And I think maybe once you get to that level, you're just like, all right, that's it. That's the level that they're going to be at. And it feels like they've both made a bit of a jump. I think, didn't Jaylen Brown just start a game the other night, 9 for 9 from the field? It feels like he's just so much more comfortable knowing where he's getting his shots. And so, yeah, I wonder if this is that next level for them. Like, it might not matter what's going on in the coaching ranks or in the front office or whatever, because these two guys are that good right now. They just made another leap, and it's just like you're in good hands with those two.
Yeah, I think they've figured out how to coexist together. They're not fighting each other for shots. They're making the extra passes to each other, and I think they're celebrating one another's success. And that's the sign of a team that can continue to build together. Obviously, a lot of people have said they got to split up. JB needs his own team. They can't play together. They're two big wings. They're both ball dominant, whatever the case may be. And I think they figured out how to both remain themselves while empowering each other. And that's very hard to do. Usually someone has to take a step back. And I think Jaylen Brown's alpha mentality is helpful because he's still aggressive. He's still able to find his shots. He's able to find how to impact the game, even when Jason Tatum has it rolling. Like you said before, Tatum's averaging 30, and Jaylen Brown starts a game 9 for 9, but doesn't force himself into the game, right? Like, he's still just taking the shots that are there as opposed to trying to get up 25 shots. And I think that's the difference in the maturity level, but also in what they're trying to accomplish. They got that close to winning a championship. So they realize if we can just tinker some things, start off a little bit better, not be under 500 at the halfway mark, then they give themselves a better chance of getting back to the finals.
Yeah, I was trying to look at their free throw shooting numbers and see if there was a big leap from last year to this year. Yeah, Jason's made that leap from 6.2 free throws. I guess that was a career high attempts last year. He's at 9 a game now. And I guess that is where you can make that bigger difference, right? There was a lot of times in the playoffs where this, you know, whether it's the Heat or the Warriors, a game got bogged down some, he's got to create. And he does the thing where he's got this, you know, ridiculously long arms, and he's, you know, sort of swipes through as he's going to the rim. Wasn't getting a lot of those calls maybe in the Eastern Conference Finals, maybe going into the finals. And it feels like he's more established ways to get to the line, given, you know, his obvious skill set.
Yeah, I think he's got a little bit more street cred, if you will, right? Like, he's been to the finals. He's played on the biggest stages. He's known as a scorer. He's a guy who's averaged over 25 in consecutive years, basically 27 a game last year. The referees understand how he plays, to understand his scoring areas. And I think they watch film just like we do. And he's very good at drawing fouls. He's good at drawing contact. He's good at baiting you in there. And then he's able to maneuver off the bounce, right? He's got the quick twitch. He flinches at you as he's going through his between crosses. He has the threat of a step back, but then he's 6'8", 6'9". He might be 6'10 now because he continues to grow. Growth plates are probably still open, and he has the ability to finish around the basket. And I think when you look at their offense, the way it's set up right now with Robert Williams being out, they have Al Horford at the 5. That's a spacing big. There's nothing but space around them for the driving angles. Their big is out on the perimeter so that it's easier to get downhill and finish around the basket or collapse the defense to make a pass out to the perimeter.
Talk to me about Donovan Mitchell with this Cavs team. Again, it's one of those situations where you watch him play and you're just like, all right, his game is effectively the same. It's not this whole new element that he didn't show at Utah, but he's upward at 31.6 points a game and seems like he's just more comfortable even being more of a lead guard, because that Utah offense, you know, was a lot of just kind of drive and kick, whatever. It feels like he's just, with a little bit more variety in the offense, is even better score than we've seen before.
Yeah, I think his efficiency is through the roof right now. As you said before, he's averaging basically 32 points per game, six assists, but what's most impressive is the 51 from the field. This is a career high in field goal attempts for him, and people talked about his playmaking, how he's improved as a playmaker, how he has better players around him. He's shooting more. He has the ball on his hands, probably a little less with Darius Garland coming back, but he's been more effective, and he's shooting 43% from three on almost 10 attempts a game. So that's showing you high value, right? High ability to make the right decisions and make his teammates better. He has an overall plus minus of plus seven. But I think the cool part is he has a bunch of bigs around him. He's got shooting. He's got K-Love coming off the bench, and he has a dominant lead guard who enjoys passing and is a perimeter-oriented player. And I think he's maneuvering in spaces that he hasn't used before, to where he's still getting his six assists a game, but he's having clear driving angles. He's having an offense that empowers him. And I think he has a chip on his shoulder coming from Utah, you know, struggling in the playoffs, not being able to work out with Rudy. I think he put an emphasis on his work ethic, his development, and being in shape so that he could get off to a really good start and show everybody that, look, I can play with anybody and it wasn't me. I wasn't the issue in Utah.
And Darius Garland, like he seems like one of those guys would just be a nightmare to try to defend, just because I feel like he could probably cross you over three separate times on one possession. He's just kind of really hard to, I don't know, he's just kind of hard to follow, it feels like. Do you have any, do you see any similarities between the two of you guys in your game?
He's super crafty, man. He's blessed with an ability to start stop. He's got that rare start stop ability where he can be going 90 to 100 miles per hour, stop on a dime, feet set, and knock down a shot. He's very crafty, nice hesitation dribbles, runs the pick and roll well, and is an underrated passer. He's averaging 8 assists a game. But you look at that 50-point game, I think he had 51. He hit 10 threes. He's turning the corner on some of these possessions where they're trying to hard hedge, right? In that last game, he was going against Rudy Gobert, one of the best defensive players in the NBA, multiple-time defensive player of the year. He turns the corner on him, throws the ball ahead like he's getting downhill, shoulders down, waist down, heads down, eyes down. Bigs follow that, right? So it looks like he's driving. He's selling, I'm going to the basket. He puts the brakes on, crosses over. He's at about 10 feet, so he's about 10 feet away from the basket. He takes a step back with one dribble from 10 feet to about 25 feet and knocks down a three in the corner. And I think that shows you the ability to stop and pause, the ability to dribble and gather, and then set himself to shoot the three ball. All in an instance, going full speed. Most people would have settled for the midi there, like stop, put on the brakes. I think Donovan does it a lot. He snatches back, shoots the pull-up jumper. I think Tyler Hero does it a lot in Miami. You watch a lot of those games. He snatches back and he shoots the two. This guy snatched back at 10 feet and got to three, similar to Drew Holiday, like strong core, strong legs, and great ability.
That sounds impossible without traveling. It sounds impossible without traveling. The math doesn't really work there.
The math ain't mathing, but I watched it and I said, and I thought to myself, well, that was impressive. And to knock that down full speed is really tough.
So what's missing from the Cavs then? Because I mean, I said they got a hole at the small forward spot, but you know, you can.
Caris LeVert plays small forward, right?
He does, and you know, they've had some ups and downs with him there. They don't have I think they're sticking with him there, but. You know, it's not like you need an all-star at every position. What's missing from them? Anything?
I don't know. You look at the roster, right? They got defense. They got shot blockers. They got shooters. They got guys who just will do the little work. They got D-Wade. They got Stevens. They got Okoro. A bunch of lottery picks. They got a vet who comes off the bench and can shoot 40-plus and can offensive rebound and outlet. And then you got two-headed monsters at the guard position. Not to mention this all-star starting caliber center. So it's like, I don't know what they're missing. Maybe continue to figure out chemistry, camaraderie, how to play together, because they got new pieces and newer roles with guys evolving. Evan Mobley and some of these guys are continuing to get better. But, I mean, they're loaded, and they're loaded for the future. A lot of these guys are locked into contracts. Some of them are on rookie deals. They've already paid out money to a lot of these guys. Garland's under contract. The big fella's under contract. Mobley's under contract for a while. Don's under contract for a while. So all these guys are under contract. So now it's just about building that chemistry and figuring out what type of role players you want to surround these guys with.
Figured out who they can fill that small forward hole with. LeBron James? I don't know. I think he's familiar. and by the way, I just realized the other day how fun it is playing with Kevin Love in 2K, because his outlets are ridiculous. Like it's fast break every time. Do you want to know the last in 1962, who were the 530 plus point per game scorers in the league that year? That was, I want to say, the most there's been in any season.
In 62?
1962. I'm pretty sure you can guess.
Chamberlain like and Jerry West.
Two or three of them. Okay, you got two of them. Chamberlain was number one. Now tell me how many points Chamberlain scored.
50.
That season. Yeah, he averaged 50 that season. So he was number one. Jerry West was fourth with 30.8. There was three more.
I'm looking at the list now.
Oh, no, you're cheating.
But I did know that it would be Chamberlain and West. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Walt Bellamy gave you 31.6 points per game in 1962. Bob Pettit, 31.1. And then it was Oscar Robertson, 30.8. What was the difference? What was going on in that season?
I didn't know Bob Pettit was getting to it like that. 31.1, goodness gracious. And Oscar was basically flirting with a triple-double with the 30 points, huh?
Yeah.
Probably 9-9 or 8-8.
As he think he is, Russell Westbrook. So you got the other day, you guys beat the Houston Rockets, and the end of the game, it was a little scuffle there between Kevin Porter Jr. and Jose Alvarado. Jose Alvarado, who is his nickname is what?
Grand Theft Auto.
Grand Theft Auto because of his move where he sides in a corner and steals inbounds passes. But he has gone from like guy with a move to like a really quality NBA rotation player. Like, talk to me about Jose. Like, what makes him so effective? And like, it feels like his story is going to live with him, you know, throughout his career.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a huge Jose fan. I think the cool part about his story is that he was undrafted, you know, kid from New York, really had to work his way up, right? Goes to Georgia Tech, wins Defensive Player of the Year. Obviously, he's playing during COVID, you know, what those COVID years were like for a lot of college students. And works out for a bunch of teams, doesn't get drafted, ends up signing a basically two-way summer league deal with the Pelicans, plays well, plays aggressive, continues to work on his game. And like you said before, he was known as a guy who was just a pesky defender. Now he's shooting 46% from the field, 42% from three, hitting big shots in big moments, but then also continuing to figure out ways to stay true to his DNA, which is tough, hard-nosed, tough-minded player from New York City who's going to do whatever it takes to help his team win. Fan base loves him. Teammates love him. Staff loves him. And he still comes and he works. I told him, I said, the difference between guys that stay in the league and guys that are in and out isn't the talent. It's the work ethic, the want-to, and being a good teammate. He has the work ethic. He has the want-to. And he's continued to be a good teammate. So I'm happy to see him being successful and playing well, getting minutes down the stretch of games, and delivering as he has for us as of late.
There was a while there where Udonis Haslam was the only one still sporting the long braids in the league, and now it's Jose. Does he get a lot of flack for that, or does he just own it?
No, he just owns it. He'll come to practice sometimes with his hair out and have his hair flowing. Similar to B.I., although Jose probably takes better care of his hair than B.I. is right now. I told B.I. he needs to go do something, you know, maybe wash it and, you know, figure out if he wants to comb it out or get it braided. But he said he's rocking the nappy fro. For the foreseeable future.
Well, it works with him because he already looks sleepy, right? So it just looks like he just got up and didn't bother doing much. But now that I think about it, your guys' roster has got some pretty good hair possibilities on it. Like, that's a good group.
Yeah, Jack's got the curly, you know, the Bart Simpson flow.
Yeah. The, what's his name? Sideshow Bob.
Sideshow Bob, yeah.
Sideshow Bob. All right.
Now she got long hair. He got braids, too. He's been changing his braids up. Trey got the baby fro. I got the nappy fro. Like a lot of guys, you know, different looks, different strokes for different folks.
So, CJ, there was this list. It was a little bit earlier in the season, but it was a list of percentage, the highest percentage of negative tweets. This is via the Action Network who looked this up, okay? And so, top of the list, like, it's people you could probably understand that why they get so many negative tweets. Top of the list, Marcus Smart, 41% of the tweets about him negative. I think that's a bit harsh. I think it's a little harsh.
It's a lot.
I think it's probably because of all the, you know, supposed flopping is probably what, and the theatrics. Draymond Green, understandable. Number three on the list, CJ, what did Bam Adebayo do to anybody? Like, why is he the third most negative tweet? If I can get a theory on that. Why the third most amount of tweets about him are negative of anybody in the league, Bam Adebayo?
I'm just so confused. Well, Bam is such a nice guy. He's quiet. You've covered him in Miami. I don't understand it.
I mean, I did a story on him about how he just bought his mother a house, like as the first, you know, as the most exciting thing that he could ever do. And yeah, and 37% negative. It's just got to be frustrated Heat fans who want him to shoot a long jumper. I think that's what it is.
Yeah, but his midi is butter. Maybe it's because he went to Kentucky.
Yeah, people forget that sometimes. Yeah, maybe. I mean, I don't know if there's that level of Kentucky haters because there's not that many, you know, Kentucky guys on this list. But I don't know what it is. I blame Boston Celtics fans, frankly. Then you got Trae Young, Jimmy Butler, Ben Simmons, Chris Paul, Jaylen Brown, another guy taking strays, it feels like, Rudy Gobert, and Jason Tatum. The reason I bring this up, Siege, because you're like the opposite of the top of that list. You have the second lowest, at least when Action Network did this, the second lowest percentage of negative tweets. I forget who had the least amount of negative tweets, but you were second. First of all, do you like that, or do you feel like you had a little bit more of an edge there?
With no, it's fans? An honor. It's an honor to be the second lowest negative tweets. I think.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And, boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
I think I can relate to people, right? Like, I'm not that tall. I'm not that big. I went to a small school. I got a cool story. I stay out the way. I just do my job and I go home. And I think people can respect that and relate to that. I think it's crazy to see that, you know, 41% of their tweets are negative, or 38 is just a high number of negativity. And it makes me think, like, how many people are you blocking? And like, how do you filter that out? Because you can't take on all that negative attention. Like, it's not good for the soul. So I think guys, I hope they block button is strong. And then you look at the market, some of these guys playing, like, why are JB and Jason, they just went to the finals? Like,
never do enough.
What could they be doing better? Like, I don't understand it at all. Jimmy Butler just was one shot away from the finals last year.
I think I've come to the conclusion now that it's Bam and Jimmy just taking strays from the big three. From the big three era where everybody thought the Heat didn't deserve that. And so now it's just like, nope, the Heat get no success. You guys, negative stuff. I'm pretty sure Trae Young, it's just about his hair. Pretty sure like all those negative tweets are just about his hair. But we got to get you to like, I think we got to get you higher on that list, TJ, because I don't know if being the most liked person actually sells. What do you think? Like, I have an answer for this for me, and I can give you mine first if you want. But what is something about you that is the worst thing somebody can say about you that is actually true?
I think right now they could just say that I'm shooting the ball very poorly. And I think that's a bit very accurate. So I wouldn't even be mad at that. I've called some people some parlays and they had the over on 2 threes and I hit one, or they had the under on 5 rebounds and I got 7. So it's like they want you to rebound less, shoot more. And then they like, you didn't get enough this or that. It's always a lot. But the funniest thing that I think I've seen was someone saying that, you know, my powers got taken like on Space Jam and somebody needs to give me my powers back. And I thought that was hilarious. I have been shooting that poorly, but I also have been feeling like, you know, very poorly health wise with colds and viral infections and stuff. But
yeah,
the tide is turning.
Having a baby.
It's called having a baby.
So the worst thing that somebody could say about you is, and you are one of the best in the world at it, you just happen to not be doing it so well right now. Like, that's the worst thing somebody could say about CJ McCollum.
Yeah, there's nothing else that they could say that would be factually true. That would be like a negative. Like, I do my job. I do my job as the PA president. I do my job as a father, as a son, as a teammate. And with all that being said, I'm still helping my team win games and still contributing towards winning. Still got a good plus minus. My on court is probably a 6 or 7 differential, maybe an 8, depending on how well we're playing offense. But I think it's funny. Like, we look at all these things and we're like, oh, one person says one bad thing to you, it's like the end of the world. And it's like, well, there's thousands of people who like admire what you do and are happy to see you doing well. And you can't let the negativity overpower you or overwhelm you. And understand that they hate on Jesus too. So there's nothing you can do perfectly well in everybody's eyes. And Michael Jordan was great, and people still said that he shot too much or he did this or he did that. And Embiid just had 59, and somebody will say that he's not good at something and he'll make up something.
I mean, he should have gotten 60. Like, how do you not get 60?
He missed 4 free throws.
Worst thing somebody could say about me, and this is crazy because I work on it a lot, is I think I have a short temper sometimes. And it's not all the time, but it has to be like something that really matters to me or someone that really matters to me. I might get animated before I should. And the second thing is I definitely don't dance enough at big gatherings. And it's not because, like, I've seen videos of myself dancing. It doesn't look that bad, but I don't know. Like, I've just never been the party starter. And so, like, nobody wants to be the guy. Like, everybody just looks at each other and just standing around. You got to have somebody doing the, and that's just not me. I don't do it enough. That's probably the 2 things you could say about me.
So think about how well you're living life. If the worst thing you could say about you is you're not a dance starter and that you may have a short temper when somebody pisses you off about your family or somebody you care about. Like, that's everybody. Like,
yeah, but if I was in the NBA, I'd probably shoot like 3% from 3 instead of 27.9, which is what you're shooting right now. So my list would grow. My list would definitely grow. What's how are you feeling this season? Like, outside of, you know, having a kid and getting sick, what's the individual feeling? Because obviously the team's got some room to grow, but you yourself.
Yeah. No, I think considering the circumstances, right, we've had a lot of starters in and out of the lineup, had some injuries. I think we've played 6 games or 7 games out of the 13 with our actual starters. Some of that has been sprinkled in with one guy being out or two guys being out. Tough schedule, 8 of our first 11 on the road, 3 losses in overtime. I think we're faring pretty well. Like, it could be a lot worse. You know, you look at some of these other teams who are struggling or balls not bouncing the right way. If we win 3 of those overtime games, in which one Laker game we definitely should have won, Utah game, guy hits a tough shot, and then we go on in overtime against Atlanta where we get a shot at the end of regulation to win it. You know, we go from 7-6 to 10-3. And like, that's the difference, like one possession. So I think we're growing as a unit. And part of my job is to help guys from a maturity standpoint of understanding how to be professional each day through wins and losses, but also how to work smarter, not necessarily harder, how to break down film, and how to be consistent. When I'm shooting 40 from 3 or my career average of 39 or 38, and when I'm shooting 27, I still have to be the same. I still have to work. I still have to have that mentality to where I can impact games in other ways. Like, you know, if I'm only going to shoot 3 for 14, I need to be able to go get us some rebounds, go get us some assists, have a low turnover, and still be a plus minus 20 on the court, which means I'm really impacting the game. So that when I do go 11 for 14 and 10 for 14 and the mean returns, where I'm shooting 45 to 49% from the field, I'm still playing defense. I'm still rebounding. I'm still assisting. And my impact to the game is that much more valuable. But I think for me, considering all circumstances, being in 7-6 and having not played well personally, but also having some injuries as a team, I think with 68, 69 games left, we're heading in the right direction.
But you're, you know, career high so far in assists, career high in rebounds. Like, it's what you're saying about impacting the game in different ways. But in terms of that part, in terms of sort of orchestrating, in terms of fitting or finding your fit, like, it feels like that's there for you, right? It's just maybe the right shots aren't there yet.
Yeah, I think the fit is definitely getting better, more comfortable for everybody. Understanding play calling, understanding spacing. You know, you go through those things when you have lineup changes or when you have a gravity guy like Z who comes in and he changes the game. He changes the way you call a game, what sets your running, where he's at on the floor, how the defense guards him. I'm getting great shots, especially these last few games, a lot of catch and shoot shots, a lot of open ones, and I haven't made them. But that's just a matter of reps and then trusting the work and then understanding that over a, you know, 82 game season, the law of averages will be what it's going to be, and your work will always show. Like, who you are is going to show over the course of the season. A couple guys can have good games in small sample sizes, but you know who's really who and who really can perform. And I think for us, we know who's who. Now it's about locking them in the little details, spacing, understanding defensive concepts, taking care of the ball, boxing out teams like the Houston Rockets who thrive on offensive rebounds, not fouling, you know what I'm saying, taking advantage of who we are as a team, which is a team who puts pressure on the rim. We shoot a lot of mid-range shots. We score in transition. We defend well in the half court. We have to continue to do those things.
Well, the Saints don't look like they're going to be recovering this season, so you're going to get more eyes on you. So I'm sure right when you start to regress back to the mean, we probably shoot the lights out when everybody's paying attention.
I like that. No, I like that a lot. All right. The next time we will be speaking will be next week. We will have played 14, 15, 16, 17, 18 games. We'll have played 18 games by the time our next podcast comes out. This is going pretty fast. It's crazy. But as always, I'm looking forward to watching some basketball. Looking forward to being home for the first time in a long time for more than 3 days. I hope you enjoy the rest of your week, and I hope the Browns figure it out, because it's looking bad right now for us.
This has been Counting with CJ McCollum.